won't sit down and I won't shut up. But most of all, I will not grow up. I won't sit down. That song I've used as the theme song for this show for the last, I don't know, 6 months to a year or so. It's Frank Turner, Photosynthesis. Jeez, I'm trying to think. There was somebody on the forums of the Doonstief who said, have you heard this song? It seems like the kind of thing you would like. And I didn't get that email for like months. Message, sorry, it was just there, you know, it was on the main page. But unless you clicked on messages, you never saw it. But I heard it and I was like, wow, this is really good. This is actually really apropos of me. Before that, I used Michael Penn's Try. I don't wanna try to anymore, I just try. That one I liked too because it was a resignation song, you know? It's like, hey, I'm not gonna try anymore. I've tried, and where has it gotten me kind of thing. And as far as I know, that was not a hit song, the Michael Penn one. As far as I know, he only had one hit song, and it was No Myth, which is a 10. It's one of the best songs anybody, any one-hit wonder could ever have. But I knew Try from, I worked at this video store in Los Angeles called Laser Blazer. And the store had been there for, well, since the 80s, I'm sure. But it was built, it was made, it was opened, it was intended to be a high-end video store that sold Laserdiscs. Laserdiscs, if you recall, they came after VHS, and they were LP-sized, and they were digital copies of movies, and they, you know, they were higher quality. They had more lines of resolution. They were insanely expensive. They were intended for people who really loved film, who really wanted more than just a videotape to watch a pan and scan version of a movie. And I'm oversimplifying, I know, but this is ultimately what Laserdiscs became. But in a place like Los Angeles or a place like New York, where there are people with money who can afford to really support their habit or their love of cinema, a store like that could thrive. And Laser Blazer was one of them, and then there was another one called, gosh, what was it called? Somebody's Laser Place. And it was in Burbank. Gosh, how can I not remember it? It was only a dozen years ago or more. Jeez, it's more than a dozen years ago now. Holy cow. It's crazy how fast time goes. Anyway, at Laser Blazer, they had been there long enough that for like their little in-store entertainment, they had VHS tapes where the employees had cobbled together like their favorite trailers, and there'd be like scenes from movies that were unusual or odd or, you know, favorites of the employees. And these employees were long gone. It was a place where you would go right out of college, or you would go right after you moved to Los Angeles, not paid a lot of money, but you had a job. And on one of these compilation tapes, somebody had put the music video for Try by Michael Penn. And if I recall, it was one of those things, it was just one take of him walking and the camera, a Steadicam followed him, or he followed the Steadicam and lip-synced the song. And there was one moment in the video where the videotape was damaged and the sound got all distorted. And the funny thing is, I hear the actual Michael Penn song, and I always expect to hear that distortion on that moment. But anyway, I'm trying to think of how that even got started. I guess it doesn't matter. But I was looking for something, and I put that on there, and then I found somebody on YouTube who, with just an acoustic guitar, did a cover of Try. And I used that as the theme song to the Rish Outcast for a little while. And then I did one myself, which I was never very happy with. Every time I do one of these songs, my limitations as a musician always come to the fore, and I just thought, well, that doesn't sound too good. But once I got this photosynthesis song on there, I started to use that. And that's crazy. I don't know how I got onto that. Oh, I just started singing the song when I sat down. I'm in the car. The windows are down. It's still summer. I guess you're probably hearing this after all those Comic-Con episodes. So it's not summer anymore when you're hearing this. I wish that I had a little bit more drive to do the Rish Outcast and to do stories on the show, because there are two or three stories that I would really like to do and then just talk about. As of this recording, I really recently wrote a story called Beggar's Canyon, and I wrote it with the intention of producing it on the Delusions of Grandeur podcast. And it's a story about young Luke Skywalker before Star Wars happened. And I don't know. Maybe I'll ask Marshall if he cares if I do it on this show as well. Probably what I ought to do is do a recording of Beggar's Canyon that's just me with no bells and whistles. Send that to Marshall and say, hey, if you want to do something with this, if you want to be Tank or Biggs or Luke or something like that, you can. Or if you want to put sound effects or whatever, you can. And then find out what he does with his. And I just put out the bare bones version here. And, you know, it'd just be fun to see what two people do with not just the same story, but the same audio track. But that's ambition talking. I don't know. I've spread myself too thin. You know what I mean? I've got just too much stuff going on. I've got podcasting. I've got my novel writing. I've got my job. I've got my other job. I've got audiobooks. I've got a deadline on a Dean Wesley Smith book, which there's no way I'm going to make the deadline. There's no way. But I can't motivate myself to say, oh, I'm going to spend all day working on this thing. I have Into the Furnace, which is so close to being typed up. I mean, the story is done. All I have to do is type it up, and I can tell everybody, I'm done, and it's X number of words. Yay. I wrote a story a couple years ago called The Ugly Table, and I got it into my head yesterday at work that's the one I want to do next on the Rish Outcast. Heck, maybe that's what this is. Okay, you know, let's switch gears. Let's say that's what this is, all right? Kids, I'm going to put this down for a minute, and then we will come back and talk in a moment. Hey, one word before I play the story. It's juvenile. I was going to say it's a grown-up story, but it's not. So The Ugly Table is, it's got some language in it. It's got quite a bit, actually. It's probably not to everybody's tastes. But if you're listening to the Rish Outcast, then A, you're one of five people, but two, I would think that you know my sensibilities, so you don't even need this warning. But I put it out there anyway. I'll see you on the other side.
The Ugly Table. I noticed it right away. The girls in my junior choir class had gotten prettier. I slowly craned my neck to observe the back two rows. It was early in the class, still morning, and I slowly craned my neck to observe the back two rows. Alberta Sorensen had been fat for years, and now all that weight had relocated to her chest and ass, and she looked like a teenaged Marilyn Monroe. Jessica Forco had always had acne ever since I met her in middle school. But on that Monday, her face was all cleared up. Wendy Jeekins's hair now shined. Catherine Ellington had an unattractive space between her teeth until today. Trina Bosch had stunning blue eyes where they'd always been gray. And Meg Card, who I'd had a crush on in the sixth grade, now she was supermodel hot, perfect in every way. Just contemplating how she was different gave me a boner. Shane, I said, seeing my best friend in the hall after class. Can I talk to you?
Yep, from the sound of it.
I went on, ignoring his inability to take anything seriously. Have you noticed anything different about the girls in our school?
Yep, long hair. They pee sitting down. There are other differences, too.
We went to our lockers, which were in the same section of B Hall. No, I mean, there were four or five girls in choir today that looked better than they ever did before. Shane nodded.
That's called spring. It happens every year. In the spring, ironically. The girls stop bundling up, and you'll discover hidden hotties.
I tried my locker combination again, having failed the first time through. This try, it opened for me. No, it wasn't that. They looked different. Better. All of a sudden.
Well, that's probably hormones, he said,
not really listening to me.
Spring does that to guys. Even I've been known to have to cross girls off my do not fly list.
Shane was fishing around the junk at the bottom of his locker now, looking for something. I leaned in. Would you consider Jessica Forco pretty, Shane? He found what he was looking for, a half-full packet of Juicy Fruit gum. He thought about my question while unwrapping one.
Jessica, is she the pizza face we sat by in algebra?
Pre-algebra, I clarified, timing it just right.
Nope. Why, do you suddenly have the hots for her?
Turn around, I said. Slowly.
He did.
Jessica Forco was coming up the hall, talking to an Asian girl I didn't know. But it would be nice to know her. Be nice to know them both.
Huh,
Shane said, noncommittally. But I could tell. He saw it too. Still, he shrugged.
Maybe there's a brand of zit cream that actually works, bro.
I don't think so.
He popped his gum. Then I wonder why there's a whole aisle of it in every single grocery store.
That's not what I mean. Her skin is clear. Smooth. What about all the marks and scars and stuff from years of bad skin? The two girls walked past us and around the corner, never slowing or noticing our stares.
You should be happy for her, bro, Shane said. She looks good now. And think about it. After years of having a face like the moon, she's probably pretty easy.
I sighed. Maybe it was nothing. Maybe I was overreacting. But it hadn't just been Jessica who had changed. Listen, do me a favor.
Nope,
he said without waiting to hear what it was. Just take a look at all the girls in your next class. A close look.
I always do,
he boasted. And see if any of them are different. Like, drastically different, you know? I'll catch up with you at lunch. Ask you what you found.
All right,
Shane said, grabbing his biology textbook and slamming his locker closed. It startled a couple of underclassmen a few feet away. He grinned.
You probably already know this, Cars, but you really need to get laid.
Yes, that I knew. But I couldn't stop thinking of Fat Alberta, as we'd nicknamed her so long ago. Now a major babe. Up ahead, I saw the short white and green skirt of some cheerleader at her locker, and took the opportunity to check out her legs. She had big protruding calf muscles that didn't look right. It was kind of gross, actually. Like one of those bodybuilder types that become so built, they stop being girls. She closed her locker as I walked by and turned around. After a full second, I realized it was Tamara Lawrence. She didn't look herself either, but for a cheerleader, it was a major disappointment. Her cool, pointy boobs seemed flatter today, and wow, she had a bit of a mustache going on. Bummer. My next class was woodshop. On my way there, I saw another cheerleader, Gwen Harper. A senior, she had always been tall, but today, she looked too tall, too skinny. Her uniform top must have shrunk in the wash, because it was short enough to reveal a section of pasty white stomach. It was not a turn-on. So, it wasn't just my hormones doing a keg stand inside me, was it? Otherwise, the cheerleaders would be mega babes too, right? But Meg Card had been a cheerleader back in junior high, and now she should have been on the cover of Maxim or the SI swimsuit issue. It didn't make sense. In my shop class, there were no girls at all. Wait, except for Spider Hollister, the gothy tomboy who did all she could to appear like one of the guys. Or a pincushion. She sat catty-corner to me, and I looked her over. She had never been even remotely cute, and today, she wasn't even remotely cute. From her head to her feet, she wore men's clothes, and seemed to dip them in bleach or something to make them fade and lose their newness. She colored her fingernails purple, so they always looked as though she had smashed every one of her fingers with a hammer instead of painting them. She wore dark makeup around her eyes, which made her look like a bandit with insomnia, and no lipstick. She was, "Fuck you looking at," I heard her say, and didn't even realize I was staring. I thought you had the other eyebrow pierced. Sorry. They're both pierced, dweeb, she said, like I was a retard. I just alternate them. Oh. She was a nasty bitch, frankly, but I decided to talk to her anyway, since she'd called me nutless, faggot, and a living shit before. Couldn't get much worse, I figured. Hey, have you noticed anything weird about the girls at school? I asked. She scowled. You calling me a dyke? I thought she prided herself in being an out lesbian, but I shook my head. No, I just wondered. Fuck, I don't know, she said, picking up two little pieces of wood and rubbing them together. I got Corinne Blocker in homeroom, and she must have got a boob job over the weekend. That's pretty weird, since she's 15. Are you sure? Yeah, she's an afternoon driver's ed with my cousin. No, are you sure she got a... I lowered my voice. A boob job? She smacked the wood together. You calling me a liar? No, I said. God, she was such a bitch. I just thought you had to leave school for a while, like when Callie Thomas got her nose job last year. Right, Spider said, for the swelling to go down. All right, maybe she just got falsies or something. But she looked good. She leaned a tiny bit closer. You want me to describe them? What? Spider sneered around a pierced lip. You boys are all the same. Horny date rapists in training. I've never raped anybody, I protested, suddenly shocked at her, though I shouldn't have been. Spider Hollister was meaner than a dog in a junkyard. A dog missing a leg. And an eye. In training, asshole, she said a bit too loud, because Mr. Spencer stepped up to my table and asked what was going on. Nothing, I said. Just talking about wood. Mr. Spencer glared icicles at his one female student, then went back to the table saw. Wood, Spider chuckled. You may be a douche stain, but you're all right, Carson. Thanks, I said, aware that that might be the closest to nice she was capable of. I didn't understand a single thing about girls, and this one was even less predictable than most. So I said what I'd say to a guy in this case. And you may suck, but you at least are upfront about it. She smiled then and turned back around. And I wondered if she was ever lonely and regretted how mean she was to everyone. I supposed it was possible. 80 minutes later, I left class distracted and got bumped by a big Mexican guy walking the other way through the hall. Sorry, he said, and I saw he was staring at a hot chick leaning over the drinking fountain. The front of her blouse hung open like a pup tent, providing quite a show. As she finished and stood up, I recognized her as Becca Carlson, the fat, stocky girl I'd cheated off of in junior high math classes. she wasn't fat anymore. She must have lost 30 pounds since... when had I last seen her? I suspected she had lost the weight all of a sudden, because her clothes didn't fit her anymore. Her pants were belted to the first notch, and the reason her blouse was so low was because it was intended for a much heftier girl. No one had ever run into anything staring at Becca Carlson before. "What's going on here?" I mumbled. "Third period, druggie," a kid I didn't know said, amusing himself with his rapier wit. But that was an interesting point. Either I was hallucinating all this, or I was crazy. I couldn't think of a third option. How could 5, 6, 7 high school girls go through a metamorphosis in such a short time? I had seen plain Janes become babes over the summer, but over a weekend? And Becca Carlson was the biggest change. Even if she had that stomach stapling operation or liposuction done, that couldn't create such radical changes. She was pretty now, but she hadn't been pretty when she was a fat, stocky girl. This change was like magic. "What if it's mass hypnosis?" I asked Shane during lunch. We'd gone to the cafeteria for our meal and purposely sat near two of the girls from my choir class. Shane admitted they looked nice and that he wouldn't kick either one of them out of bed, but he didn't think there was anything out of the ordinary going on. He stuck to his spring being in the air theory until two more girls sat down at the table with them. One of them was Wendy Jeekins, who I'd noticed earlier, but the other I didn't know.
"Whoa," Shane marveled.
"What?"
"That girl, Hamie Salerno. I made out with her once."
"Her name is Hamie?" He made a dismissing motion with his hand.
"It's a Spanish thing."
"And you made out with her?" She was dark-haired and exotic, with big eyes and full lips, like that woman in Desperado. She had shorts on, and her brown legs were approximately a mile long. "Congratulations."
"That's the thing," Shane said. "It was at Kyle Rogers' party 2 years ago. We..."
"The first time you drank," I remembered, stuffing a couple Doritos in my mouth.
"Exactly. There was all these wine coolers and beer bottles, free for the taking, you know? And toward the end of the night, I see Hamie sitting all by herself on their game room couch, and somebody's playing some old R&B song. So I just sit down by her side and start kissing her. We made out for, like, 2 hours. Didn't even talk."
I had trouble swallowing my Mr. Pibb. This was a major revelation. "Wow, how come you never told me this before?"
"I only ever told my uncle," he said.
Shane's uncle was a priest or something, and always gave him advice and some kind of absolution for the things he did wrong. I'd met him before and thought he was pretty cool, like a big brother to everybody he met. I looked back over at Hamie Salerno. Those legs, that hair, the outline of her bra beneath the back of her t-shirt. I was even more envious of Shane than usual. "Why not tell me?" He sighed.
"Because she was a major ugger, bro. She had these moles on her face and uneven eyes and the worst hair. And I guess I didn't care because I was so drunk, but when I sobered up, I was just disgusted with myself. The reason she was alone at that crazy party was because somebody'd have to be wasted to even talk to her, let alone dry hump."
"Well, she looks pretty good now." That was an understatement.
"Yeah. And look at her face."
I tried to, but a couple guys from the basketball team were hovering over them, acting all smooth and confident, and blocked my view. "What about it?"
"Those moles are gone."
He said it like a major revelation. What do you call it? Epiphany. They could have been lasered off.
"Eat it," he said, shaking his head. "She's become somebody else. Somebody way better."
And that nailed it, right on the head. That's what had happened to those choir girls and the ones in the hall. They were now their best selves. They're perfect reflections. Shane stood up. Where are you going?
I'm going to go talk to her. I'm going to check out her eyes.
To see if they're different too?
He kept on talking, not even listening to me.
Maybe she'll go out with me, because of our past history, you know?
He went over, but there were other boys, and a couple girls, already at that table, talking to them, moving their arms and heads in a way that I recognized as a mating ritual, even from here, as if I was a nature scientist, watching some big feathered birds. I knew two of the guys flashing their pearly whites. These were not the girls they'd normally be hitting on. I'd seen several of these girls sitting together in the cafeteria before. The unpopular ones, the unattractive, the ones without the means or transportation to eat lunch off campus. Somebody like me and Shane, I guess.
Creepy, isn't it?
A female voice said at my left. It was Spider Hollister, sitting down right beside me. She held a Ziploc bag filled with carrots and munched them like they were real food.
Hey, what's up?
I asked, a little unnerved that she thought we were friends now.
I kept my eyes open after what you said. And you're right.
Meaning?
Well, I don't know what it means, but these chicks have fucking changed.
How?
How should I know? You want me to ask them?
Sure. That was a pretty great idea. Do you think they'd actually tell you? She scowled at me.
Dude, they wouldn't tell me if my bush was on fire.
She scowled at them, too.
Those chicks are losers, geeks, choir quims, church mice.
But they're girls. Maybe they'll fill you in. She shook her head. Once again, I just didn't get it. Then she raised her ringed eyebrows.
Why don't we get Shane to ask them? He seems to have hit it off with Salerno.
I looked over. Hamey was smiling at him, disarmingly, and he was chattering away with a goofy grin on his face.
Wow, he looks like he's babbling, I observed. He never does that anymore.
It was a nervous habit he'd had when he had a crush on a girl in years past, something he'd put behind him. I told Spider this.
That's kind of cute, she said. But Salerno's not interested.
I perked up at this, studying Hamey Salerno across the cafeteria. She sure looked into him, and I found myself jealous of my friend for, like, the thousandth time.
Are you sure?
Hell yeah, I'm sure.
How can you tell?
She's all animated, right? But she's not smiling with her eyes. She's just humoring him. The bitch. I looked back and tried to see what she was seeing. It looked pretty real to me. I wished a girl would show me that kind of attention. But then, Hamey turned her head away from Shane and rolled her eyes at Wendy Jeekins. There was no mistaking that.
Do all girls do that?
I asked Spider.
Pretty much.
That thought terrified me. I didn't feel so jealous of my best friend anymore. A minute later, Shane came back to the table. He was sweating a little bit.
So, how'd it go? I asked.
She's still into me, he boasted.
Oh, yeah? You going out?
Spider asked, clearly doubtful.
What are you doing here, Gothman prophecies?
Shane asked. That sounded more like him.
I'm watching you strike out at the ugly girl section of the lunchroom.
He snorted.
I didn't strike out. She just has to work late on weekends.
Ah,
Spider said, not at all convincingly. That sounds real likely.
Shane sat down across from me. What do you want, cockroach?
It's Spider, fuckwheat, and I was just leaving.
She started to rise. I stopped her.
No, wait a minute. Stay here and help us figure out what's going on.
She sighed and stayed put, watching as the ugly girl table was joined by two more attractive students. Both had been noticed by my eyes earlier, but seeing them all in a group only solidified the change.
They're all in on it together, I muttered.
In on what?
Shane asked.
I don't know,
I turned to Spider.
Could it be hypnosis somehow?
Hypnosis? On the three of us?
And all the dudes talking to them,
Shane added.
On everyone? Is that sort of thing possible?
I don't see how, Spider said. She was half watching me and half watching them, a surly, unpleasant expression on her already sour face.
What if it's like something in the water? Shane wondered. Like we're drinking it and finding all the girls more attractive.
Why? I said. Who would do that?
Well, I don't know. The government or something. They put fluoride in the drinking water, right?
I only drink Red Bull, Spider said.
But you shower in water, right?
He asked.
Come over sometime, she said. That's Red Bull, too.
Why would they do that? I wondered, completely missing her flirtation.
I'm joking, dumbass, Spider chuckled.
No, the government. Why would they put something in the water to make us...
So we have sex, man!
Shane exclaimed, almost rising out of his chair.
They need a bunch of babies in 9 months for some reason, so they put a chemical...
For what reason?
I don't know, bro. Experiments, or spare parts, or soldiers. Some reason.
And we're going to lose control and start having sex? I asked.
Yeah, Shane said. I'm sure feeling it.
Spider rolled her eyes, then turned to Shane.
What about me?
You? Well, you're a lesbo, so it affects you too.
No, jerk-off. I'm a girl. Do I suddenly look more attractive?
Shane squinted at her.
No, but maybe because I know you're a lesbian.
I'm not a goddamn lesbian, okay?
She said, loud enough to be heard off campus.
Okay, he said sheepishly.
She turned away and saw McCann Shudd, an irritating bookworm with thick glasses and just as thick braces, carrying her lunch tray down the aisle.
What about her?
Who?
She pointed.
Mary Ann or something. I had her in my history class 1 year. Does she look hot?
Shane and I both looked at her. The poor girl might have been brilliant, but she had the body of a 10-year-old. A 10-year-old boy.
No.
No. We both said. Don't you want to have sex with her?
No way, Shane said.
I shook my head. Spider looked back to the ugly girl table.
And her?
She pointed. Meg Card was just sitting down. She looked like friggin' Jessica Alba in her prime, or that lady who used to play Wonder Woman. I forgot to breathe.
Oh, hell yeah, Shane said. I would right now, in front of everybody.
Spider made a disgusted sound.
If you dipshits could hear yourselves.
Hey, I didn't say anything,
I argued. She shooed me away with her hand.
Well, Megan Card was always cute. Not a great example. But I think it's just them. That bunch. They're all somehow way more attractive today than ever before.
How?
I said again. I don't know. But it would be cool to find out.
Oh. I think that's where we're going to quit for the day. I had intended for this just to be one episode. I had recorded, you know, the intro and the outro, as I call it. Where I talk about the story, the afterword. And, that was before I had edited the story. I had recorded the story. And now, here we are cut to later. And I've edited the story and realized how long the story is. And then I started to edit the afterword and realized that that's like a half hour long. And so rather than have a 90-minute episode, let's just do 2 40-something-minute episodes. So we'll stop here. We'll pick up later in the story or later in the month for the rest of the story. I will include a tiny bit of talking about the story. Hopefully not a lot of apologies. The afterword ended up being a lot of apologizing about the content of the story. and gosh, I wish I were a little bit more of California Rish, who was like, hey, this is the story that I wrote, this is why I wrote it, and you know, if you don't like it, yeah, you smell that? But regardless, just listen to this little paragraph and then I'll be back. So that was the ugly table. There are two things that I wanted to talk about with the story. But here's a third one. In case you don't know, this story was inspired by a girl that I knew when I was in school. She was a real plain Jane girl. I don't know. It'll make me sound like such an a-hole to say this, but I'm going to, because it's just you and me, right? I tolerated her. I didn't particularly like her, but I just, you know, I put up with this girl. And then years and years went by, and I moved back from LA, and I ran into this girl, and she still remembered me, and we hung out on a couple of occasions. And then one night, we were together, and I was talking to her, and I looked at her, and she was suddenly beautiful. It was a phenomenon, something that probably everyone has experienced, but I was surprised by it. I knew this girl. I knew what she looked like. I knew her, right? And suddenly I was super, super attracted to her. And I mentioned this to my friend, and he said, yeah, it's called alcohol. But it wasn't that. It was just I saw something in her I hadn't seen before, and suddenly I was super attracted to her, and that never changed. It never went back. You know what I mean? It's like a switch was flicked, and she was always on the list of people that I found attractive. And so I was telling him about this script that I was writing where this girl suddenly becomes beautiful. It's not what the story was about, but it was just this little tiny detail. And I kept thinking about, you know, yeah, you could write a whole story about that, really. Oh, geez, two llamas were having sex. And so I thought about it and I said, yeah, you know, I could write a story about that. And so that's what The Ugly Table is. And I guess our conversation, or I don't know what inspired Big, but Big wrote a story called The Mirror Sometimes Lies about a girl at a party who magically becomes attractive. And I thought, well, let's put these out for sale. It was the very first thing that we ever put out for sale, the two of us. And we intended for it to be like the first of a broken mirror, first broken mirror collection that we'd sell. That we would do that every few months. We'd put out these stories that we'd written, you know, what the broken mirror stories are, right? Where it's two stories with the same premise. This story takes place in a fictionalized version of my high school. And there are a bunch of stories that I've written that all take place in this same area, this same universe. And I think it started about the year 2000. I wrote a story about the time that my friends and I saw a UFO. Now, only some of us saw it. I think people were probably looking in the other direction or making out or whatever. But I was one of the ones that saw it, and I thought, you know, I want to write about that. And so I wrote this story, and it was really fun to write a story with a fictionalized me and a fictionalized my friends. And I started doing several based on things that happened to us or things that we talked about in those days, things that we were afraid of or things that we were amused by. And eventually I sort of stopped doing that. I started setting stories in Montana or Arizona or Colorado or California. I don't know. I guess I felt like I had played that out. The worst was I wrote three stories that were all about a music appreciation class at that school. And the characters in those three stories were all mentioned in each other's stories, as was the teacher. And they had like little side adventures or whatever, but they were, I guess, music related. And I was like, wow, that's cool. I don't think I'm going to do those anymore after that. So for a couple of years I didn't, but then when I wrote Ugly Table, yeah, it was only natural that it go back to that place. And so it did. Okay, it was more than a paragraph, but it wasn't much. Thank you for listening to the Rish Outcast. I will be back. I'll try and make it like exactly 2 weeks or something like that, maybe 10 days, for the second half of The Ugly Table. And yeah, be prepared for lots of apologizing. Thank you. Good night.
Oh, it's so pitiful. Do you realize that the Rish Outcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license? The state of the world today. Good night.